It's 8:12 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher with the Summit County Council. Sat through a number of presentations yesterday on the phone with a recap of some of the business conducted. I have Summit County Council member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
How are you, Leslie?
I'm doing well, thanks. Let's see, you made the motion to approve the joint resolution with Park City, sending it off to UDOT regarding the future of Highway 248. So what's the county resolving to do with this?
Well, UDOT has come forward with this EA, that their environmental assessment calls, I think, Park City and we in Summit County want to, take a little closer look at that. It just, we want more transit-oriented solutions and less pavement if we can get it. And we want to make sure that they realize that we're on a united front on that topic.
So what multimodal solutions do you want to pursue to deal with the traffic jams that we see on 248?
Well, I think that I don't have a silver bullet that I can tell you right now. It's just the old tried and true solution of laying down more asphalt. We want to double and triple and quadruple check that and explore other options.
Okay. And, I mean, really, what happens from here then? I mean, you send it off and then just wait to hear back from UDOT, whether or not they're willing to work with Summit County and Park City?
No, we have a very good relationship with the Region 2 people at UDOT. And it's not like we're just sending a piece of paper into thin air and hoping it sticks somewhere. We'll be participating with them.
All right. So is there any kind of timeline on the future of 248 and improvements to it?
I don't know that. In transportation matters, time is slow, and it takes a lot of advanced planning. And so we'd like to see some solutions. We're not trying to slow things down, but I don't know the exact timeline, but it will, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It takes a lot of advanced planning.
All right. Let's see. The trail agreements that were approved with Park City School District and the Water Reclamation District were approved. Looking at the details of the agreements, there seemed to be some provision that bikes have to be non-motorized. So did you discuss this? I mean, are e-bikes allowed or not?
Well, the district's position is that e-bikes are allowed. And our chair, Roger Armstrong, was making the point that the language in the easement said that no motorized, it's pedestrian only, no motorized vehicles except for electric wheelchairs. So by calling out that exception for electric wheelchairs, it begged the question of, maybe, where we're so specific on electric wheelchairs, maybe we also meant that since that's the only exception, that electric bikes are not allowed. And the district said this is their standard easement and that their interpretation of it is that e-bikes are allowed. And it's a topic that we need to revisit because, we probably ought to clarify our easement form. In this case, the only two parties that would have standing to complain if e-bikes were used and to try to throw that provision at us would be the school district on the one hand and Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation, and they're not apt to do this. These are paved trails, but it brought to light a bigger question of solidifying our policy on e-bikes. I personally think that they should be allowed on any of our trails when needed, meaning either due to age or rider disability or something, so that you'd see them everywhere. But that's a whole other topic that needs a lot more discussion.
So were the agreements approved then, or do you need to come back?
Yes, they were approved.
Okay. Was some clarification then that e-bikes are allowed?
We didn't alter the text of the of the easements. But we believe that the district made it clear that e-bikes, that from their point of view, e-bikes are going to be allowed. If for some reason, like I say, the school district or the water reclamation district say, oh, no, you know, this agreement says you can't do that, then we'll amend it. But we don't see that happening.
Okay. That does remind me, though, for those traveling along the rail trail this morning, it was kind of an obstacle course, so be careful if you're on your bike there. Lots of tree branches down there. Let's see. The council approved a number of policy updates as the governing board of Mountain Regional. What might be worth noting, I guess, of that is that this is the sixth anniversary of the Weber Basin Water Compact, which you, Chris, did a lot to negotiate. How do you think that agreement's worked out?
I think it's worked out really well. You know, when I came on the council in 2009 and was briefed on the extensive litigation that the county through Mountain Regional had with Summit Water Distribution Company and how each of those two companies and even Park City Municipal were off doing their own things in terms of trying to import water to the basin, and then they would challenge each other's moves, either their water right maneuvers or their efforts to build pipelines by challenging their EAs. And the county had spent something like a couple million dollars, came from our insurer, the Utah Local Government's Trust, but it had been just a very rancorous process, and everybody was lawyered up and lobbyist up, and now we have this method of cooperating, and as you maybe heard from the meeting, that Mountain Regional had filed a big change application, the biggest they'd ever done, covering huge quantity of water rights, and there wasn't a single protest. And normally that would have been fought tooth and nail and would have gone nowhere because the other companies would have been fighting it. And it also allows to the extent that Mountain Regional has a surplus, it can share with the other water companies and optimizes the system until a new project is needed and brought on the line. So I think it's a good thing, very good thing, and I think most people that are acquainted with it believe it. It was a team effort, but it was one of my high priorities at that time.
So how is our water supply? I mean, of course, we had a great winter, but a year ago, it was David Muir telling us that we would need 3 above-average winters to recover from the droughts.
Well, as I was saying yesterday, most of our water in Mountain Regional and a lot of it from Park City comes from the Weber River through Weber Basin Water Conservation District. And the time when Weber Basin cuts us off as municipal users would be when the world has come to an end and everything's cut off. I mean, agriculture would be cut before municipal. But as to, you know, the weather cycle, yeah, I mean, last year was bleak. And had we had another one like it this year, you know, we'd have been scraping the bottom of the barrel on many fronts. But Summit County, you know, Mountain Regional and our water companies we're in a good position, very good position with, you know, we're not dependent on groundwater wells. When you have years like last year and the water table declines in these wells and you have back-to-back and then your wells start to go dry or start to produce salty water or start to decline in the quantity of water, that's when, as a water company, you get, you know, concerned because you can't meet your demand. But what we have is a big straw into the Weber River that's backed up by a lot of storage. And like I say, Weber Basin controls it, and it's a very robust entity that is, you know, going to take care of municipal uses before the secondary water and irrigation are covered. So, you know, I mean, we're in good position, but, you know, we'd be great to, you know, have normal water years every year, or at least often enough to to keep us to the status quo level.
Yeah, so, I mean, in good position now, but given the fact that we had years of drought before, are we out of the woods?
Well, I mean, obviously, if we have multiple years back-to-back of drought in Weber and the whole system, their whole system is totally challenged, then would we be curtailed? We're not using our full allotment of their water anyway, so we have some to give. We're probably only using 3/4 or 70% or something. And so, I'm not saying that, we're on easy street, but we're in a lot better position, I think, personally, than a water system that is based solely on wells, that are site-specific wells. And the aquifer in the Snyderville Basin is not a terrific one. And it's like yesterday they were saying one of their capital facility plan items was to drill a new well. I think it was number 17. They wanted to get 300 gallons a minute out of it at a large cost. And that's a very small well in the water world when you're trying to, when you have to deliver the quantities of water that Mountain Regional does. That's just like a little rounding, it's meaningful, but it's not going to save the day. You'd need 20 of those, to equate to what we get out of that Lost Canyon pipeline. And the pipeline is just a lot more dependable because of the storage and the bigger system it's tied to, not a little compartmentalized underground aquifer that is the Snyderville Basin. So, we shouldn't rest on our laurels, but there are a lot of communities that are totally well-dependent, and when you get in these dry years and things start to go haywire, then you got a real problem.
So is the council looking to revise any building or development codes to encourage homeowners to xeriscape more than ordinary landscape?
The last discussion we had was relating to regulating the size of homes. Right now, we don't have a maximum home size except for in one development agreement in Promontory where there was a 10,000-square-foot cap, and Promontory has sought to increase that. They claimed it was self-imposed, and we're still evaluating their request, but it brings to light the question, not just from water consumption, but also from the impacts on traffic and affordable housing and carbon footprint of these mega homes. If you have a 20,000-foot home, it probably takes a half dozen people to maintain it, to landscape, maintain the landscaping and clean it, and to, do a lot of this. That it has that kind of an impact on, exacerbates some of our other issues of traffic, people having to commute in and out because they can't live here to provide those services and whatnot. So I don't know where we'll wind up, but in Mountain Regional's world, a big home, a standard equivalent residential connection is based on a 3,000-foot home. So if you have a 9,000-foot home, that's 3 ERCs. So you're paying 3 times the impact fee, and then you're assessed monthly 3 times. Your water bill's 3 times. And I quizzed Scott Morrison, our director, there as to, whether we're, if they're willing to pay it, whether we're willing to give it. And he said, yes, at this point we are. So we're not using water as a tool there. They just pay for more. But xeriscaping would be, really good because they're willing to pay for more, maybe that's not the way we want to use the scarce resources, allowing them to have a big landscape. But I should say, and I know this is going on more than you like, Leslie, but I should say that the amount of water that we allocate per home for this standard equivalent residential connection is only a half an acre foot, which is very low statewide, and it's a recognition that we don't do a ton of outdoor irrigation, you know, on landscaping, because we're in the mountains and things will somewhat grow naturally. I mean, we do some, but in comparison to other parts that are drier and hotter down in the valleys, it's a small amount. So in some ways, you know, our outdoor irrigation is not a big problem. Not that that, you know, when we talk about conservation, that's the first place we'd start, but it's not as bad as in other places.
Okay.
It's a long answer, sorry.
Yeah. finally, just wanted to ask you, I know that it'll be after the Summit County Fair before you and I talk again, but you bringing anything to the fair this year?
Am I bringing anything to the fair?
Uh-huh. You've brought cattle in the past. Haven't you?
I'm showing up at the Demo Derby and driving the royalty.
That's it?
My contribution.
Okay. Well, sometimes you bring cows, don't you?
Oh, you know, at the stock show, a lot of our employees in our ranching business, their kids will bring them. I think that's the best part of the fair myself, because these kids have worked all year, you know, growing and grooming and babying their lamb or their hog or their, you know, or their steer. And then it actually, you know, everybody comes together to boost them and to help bid them up. And then the kids have a pretty nice little nest egg that they can help fund their college account. Or, I mean, it's not huge, but it's sometimes thousands of dollars. It's a neat thing. I mean, the Derby's fun, but it's, you know, rough and tumble, doesn't accomplish much at the end of the day, but the stock show does.
Okay. All right, Chris, hey, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks a lot. Have a great one.
That's Summit County Council member Chris Robinson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Stay tuned. We'll be checking in with Derek Radke talking about the Jeremy Roundabout Project. You're listening to the Local News Hour.
Hey.
Well, if you've been exiting Interstate 80 there at the Jeremy Ranch exit, you're well aware of the road detours and the additional stop signs and the new way to enter I-80 eastbound. In the studio with an update on the Roundabout Project, I have Summit County Public Works Director Derek Radke. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So how is it going?
It's going very, very well. The contractor got kicked off, I think it was like June 10th or something like that. He's been cutting to subgrade, building detour on the Pinebrook side. Mostly we've been dealing with a lot of utilities. As you can imagine, there's water, there's sewer, there's uncountless number of fiber optic lines that go through there, just transcontinental stuff. All kinds of conflicts that we're having to relocate before the contractor can really, you know, just fly. But they are cutting to subgrade where they can. The Pinebrook side, of course, saw the detour shift to the on-ramp, eastbound on-ramp, and that's allowed them to do a lot of that utility work. They're cutting the trail for the underpasses on that side, and they're currently building the what will be the new leg out of Jeremy on the north side of the highway, so that they can institute another detour on that side, hopefully a week from this Sunday.
Okay. And again, it took me a trip around Jeremy Ranch and Pinebrook to figure out how to get back onto the highway. But if you're coming out of like Quarry Village, you make that, there's a stop sign, you just basically turn right and you're on the freeway.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. It was okay. Here we are. Any unexpected surprises with the contractor at this point?
I mean, a couple of utilities that we thought were clear or not clear, things that we thought were deeper or less. Like there was one Rocky Mountain Power line that was, it was probably a couple feet deep, but with the new grade, it would have ended up 9 inches, you know, we're having to deal with those kind of things. Same thing with the power line that was paralleling where the trail is that goes under the eastbound on-ramp, that would have ended up being exposed in the cut slope. You know, they do their best to identify where all these things are during design, but where things are actually at everywhere, it's hard to imagine. So But Rocky Mountain Power has been really, really great. All the utilities have been great, kind of unexpectedly great. Sometimes you have to wait forever to get them, but they all jumped right on it, and we're so much appreciated.
Yeah, so at this point, are we still on schedule?
I think we're probably a couple of days behind. Just we found some water on the north side, Jeremy side, which has kind of slowed down that the leg out of the roundabout to that will be the new road, but also the next detour. So that we found some water that held us up for a couple of days. But generally, I think we're really close.
Yeah. And has it been more challenging there on the Pinebrook side, just given all of the commercial businesses and...
No, the only challenge we have is, you know, we have, I'm going to assume they're Pinebrook residents, they might be visitors, but they're using Gorgoza Pines Road as a way to get out of Pinebrook instead of using the formal detour down Pinebrook Road. I timed it myself. It's about a 10-second difference rather than go over the speed humps on the private road. So we're responding to that neighborhood. We will be putting up additional barricades, closing the road on one end. People will be forced to go on the detour route. But again, it's about a 10-second change. It's really not a big deal.
Yeah. And in terms of the budget, are we still on budget? What was it, like 10.6?
Yeah, that's about the total cost, including engineering, utilities. And, I think we've had a couple additional costs with the utility relocations. Some soft spot stuff, but generally it's minor.
Okay. And when is it supposed to be wrapped up?
So we're still shooting to have the roundabouts functional right about the time school starts. Hopefully it doesn't slip too far. But then there'll be all the tie-ins, you know, the roads that come into and out of those roundabouts. They'll be building little slivers, directing traffic to one side. So there will be continued construction probably into the end of October. And then hopefully it's all cleanup and landscaping work and stuff like that after that.
So basically complete this season.
That's the goal. Mm-hmm. Contractors working really, really hard. Dry Creek Structures has been just, that's their goal and they're working hard to meet it.
Okay. So when it's all finished, I mean, just to kind of give people an idea, say we're... let me see. Say we're coming from Park City and want to get to Quarry Village. So everybody's taking a right off of Interstate. We would be heading westbound on Interstate 80 if we were coming from the Park City area. We would all take a right. We would all go around the roundabout and then come back towards Pinebrook. That's how it's going to work?
Right. So you'll exit eastbound on the ramp and then hit the roundabout. You'll just continue. Kind of bear right, then you'll bear left around the roundabout. You'll go under the structure that's there currently. You'll kind of bear right around the circle, and you'll either exit onto Pinebrook Boulevard and go south and take one of the little side accesses, or you can continue around and take the Kilby eastbound leg and get there very easily.
Or you'd keep going further then to get back onto the freeway headed
right.
Eastbound then.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
And then that would be the same then from people coming from the Salt Lake Valley. They would be heading eastbound and they need to get to their homes in Jeremy Ranch. Again, they would all take the right towards Pinebrook, come back around the roundabout, back to their homes in Jeremy then.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
So right turns only is what it's doing.
Yeah, right turns only, bearing left if you're going around the circle. But if you're exiting, it's always a right. Out.
Okay. And I mean, traffic, with all of the new stop signs, traffic actually working pretty good.
Yeah, I think we're lucky in that it's, the slow time during traffic. People are vacationing, school is out. So this is actually a great time to do the detours. I've been over there. Yeah, people are having to stop at the stop signs, but I don't see a lot of delay but we had a four-way stop before that everybody was having to stop at. So I don't see a big difference. Personally,
yeah, I was always trying to make that left turn.
Yes,
from either way. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the Jeremy Ranch Park and Ride is closed. Have we kind of made another location? Are people parking at the elementary school, or do we have permission? Or
tried to direct everything back to Ecker Park and Ride. Hopefully, folks are using that. It doesn't look like people are. UTA Connect is back to Kimball Junction. They couldn't quite make the detour stuff work, at least, from their perspective. So I think there's people parking at the Kimball Junction Transit Center area to catch that ride.
Okay. The recycling services that were there at the Jeremy Park and Ride have also been moved to Ecker then?
Correct.
Okay. Let's see. And people want more information. You kind of got a dedicated website.
Let'sGoSummit.org, and you can email it the same thing. So it's we've had tremendous, I can't remember the exact number, 600-700 folks that have signed up for the email list. And we're sending out weekly updates.
Okay. I know that's the kind of the big project of the summer. What else you got going on?
Our overlay projects are well underway. I think we're most of the way through that. Pinebrook Road, I think, still has to be done on the basin side. And there's a few east side roads that are still in the works. Wooden Shoe Lane, and I can't remember the others off the top of my head. But everything's going well.
And the Hoytsville Bridge?
Opened yesterday, unexpectedly. They didn't even tell us they were opening it. They got the barrier and guardrail up early in the week, and they got the painters there. It must have been early yesterday, and they opened it up.
Okay. Took longer, though, than you had hoped, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had some construction issues late last fall and felt it better from a cost perspective to put the project on hold through the winter. And I know it was inconvenience for some of the residents in that area, but from a cost perspective, it probably saved us about $250,000.
Okay. Anything else, Derek?
No, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. This is Derek Radke, Summit County Public Works Director. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:40 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, 50 years ago, July 20th, 1969, Americans gathered around their TV sets to watch what many thought couldn't be done. That was the landing of Apollo 11 on the moon. And then, of course, witness Neil Armstrong, the first human to step onto the moon's surface. A few weeks ago, I posted a request on the KPCW Local News Hour Facebook page to see if there was anyone living along the Wasatch back to tell their Apollo 11 story. Kim Doherty's name was brought to my attention by a listener. She agreed to talk to me a little bit about the man that she's met a few times. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what do you remember about what happened on July 20th, 1969?
Well, I remember where I was. I guess most people do. I grew up in a small town called New Bremen, Ohio, which is about, 25 miles from Wapakoneta, where Neil's from, where my father's from. You know, they graduated high school together. So I was in New Bremen, and we were at my aunt and uncle's house because they had the largest television. And this was a historical event. You had to see it, and it had to be as big as life as you could make it. So that's what I remember. I was 11 years old then, so don't do the math, but that's where I was.
Right. And your father with you. I mean,
yes,
so you probably
yes.
had heard some stories about him. It's like, well, I know that guy.
Absolutely. My father talked about Neil a lot. We would go visit my grandparents, and we would pass Neil Armstrong's grandparents' farm, actually where Neil was born. And my dad, I think every time we passed by, mentioned that that's where Neil was born or where his grandparents lived. And Neil was so wonderful. He always came back to the high school reunions many years, even after he was, you know, famous, and made a point to talk to my mom and dad. And that meant a lot to my father.
Yeah. So as a kid, had you ever met him?
You know, I did, Leslie. I remember meeting him once, at least, in Wapakoneta. I don't remember exactly where. I do remember my father introducing me, and I was in awe. I think it might have even been before he had landed on the moon, but he was involved in the space program. And, you know, someone coming from the small town of Wapakoneta, which has less than 10,000 people, who's in a high school class of less than 80 people and is famous or makes it, you know, makes it to be, you know, was in the space program. My father was very proud of him. And so Neil was very kind. So I do remember that.
Yeah. And you were telling me off air that smart, Neil smart.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Intelligent. Absolutely.
And what, graduated a year early? Or?
He did. He skipped a grade. And he actually graduated from high school at age 16. And at that point, too, he had gotten his pilot's license at age 16. In fact, he had a pilot's license before he had a driver's license. I think that, he was very, very intelligent, obviously.
Yeah. So when you had the opportunity to meet him, I mean, how old were you then?
I was 11.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, that was the moon landing time.
Yeah.
And I don't remember exactly how old I was. It could have been before or after. But I actually know Neil probably more from my husband Dave and I live in Cincinnati. And Carol, his wife Carol, and Neil were neighbors of ours. And we belonged to the same country club. And would, you know, frequently see them out playing golf or having dinner. So that's how.
So you had an opportunity then to talk to him at those occasions?
Yeah, sometimes. Neil was very, very humble. He was a man of few words. You know, he didn't necessarily want to talk about a lot of things. And I had asked my husband that question yesterday. I said, did you ever really ask Neil a lot about his moon landing? And he said, no, I kind of felt like, you know, he didn't necessarily want to always talk about it. But he had a great sense of humor. He loved to tell jokes. But he was a man of few words.
Yeah. That's interesting, though. That, I mean, and we kind of hear that about him. Just some people call him a recluse, and others say, oh, no, not at all. He was out and about. He just, he's doing his job, I guess. Right.
Right? You know, my father would say, too, that he was very quiet. Yeah. But he was so intelligent that he thought about things before he talked. So many times you would see him, and he would just greet you, and it ended there, you know. But once you got to talk to him, he could tell great stories. So yeah,
right, pretty impressive. So you were saying that your husband would play cards with him. I mean, what did they play? Poker?
Well,
was he a poker player or a bingo?
My husband and he belonged to it's the Commercial and Commonwealth Club in Cincinnati, and they. Try to get a lot of business leaders in Cincinnati to get to know each other in a social setting so that, you know, they can get to know each other and maybe eventually do business. So they would go on trips together, take big trips, and, they would just play cards. I'm not sure exactly all what they played, but, you know.
And there's still, of course, some confusion about whether Neil Armstrong said one small step for man or if he really meant to say one small step for a man. And I'm guessing nobody's going to know that.
I know. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2012. My father passed away 2 weeks after Neil did, too. So, I don't know. I do know that every now and then he will say, you know, I didn't say that, or I don't think I said that, or I don't remember it done that way, because I've been told stories that maybe weren't quite true either. So I do have one fun story, though, about that. We have another mutual friend. His name's Charlie Meacham, and he was head of LPGA for a long time, the women's golf, and revived that. He was great friends with Neil, and Neil loved to play golf. And so the buddies would get together and play golf a lot, and they were getting their picture taken. So the photographer was getting the people together. There's quite a few gentlemen that had played in this tournament. And he points over at Neil and goes, you, sir, the man in the green shirt, would you please take one small step to the right? And everybody broke down laughing. They must have laughed for 20 minutes because the gentleman didn't know it was Neil and didn't know exactly what he said, but finally got the picture taken. But I love that story. So...
So what premiered at Sundance this year was the film Apollo 11. Have you had an opportunity to see it?
I have not. I plan to do that. I have not actually seen First Man either. I'm reading the book, and I really want to get through the book before I see the movie just to see if it's the Neil that I know.
Yeah. I mean, do you still have kind of a fascination, though, with NASA, with space, with
all of that? Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. We have another good friend, Thomas Zurbuchen, who's head of all of science at NASA, and he comes out to ski frequently, so he tells us some things that are going on. So, yeah, I'm very fascinated by it. In fact, this morning I was walking my dog, and I was walking on the ridge where we live here in Park City, and I turned around on the ridge, and up in the sky was the full moon, and I looked at it and I laughed, and I gave it a wink because Carol Armstrong, Neil's wife, said every time you look at the moon, give it a wink and think of Neil. And I do that, and I laughed because I thought, oh, okay, there he is.
Yep.
So I love that.
It's got its own hashtag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Kim, thanks for sharing some of your experiences with it. It's I think for those of us who remember, I mean, there's so many kids that don't, but it was like a big deal.
It was a big deal. And I do want to add, too, that Carol Armstrong continues to honor him, his name and everything. And in Cincinnati, Cincinnati Children's Hospital, she's on the board, as my husband is, too. And they are building a research tower, and they're going to name it after Neil. So very proud of that, too. That, you know, good family.
Yeah. All right, Kim, thanks for your time this
morning.
Thanks,
Leslie.